fantastic organisation, and it's wonderful to actually hear a recent report that suggests that British people as well have shown that they've got a heart, as charity shops have revealed bumper donations. Now, to actually address this and share with us the good news of this fantastic thing, we're delighted to welcome the regional manager of the British Heart Foundation Furniture and Electrical Stores in the South. That would be the fabulous Caroline Usher. How are you, Caroline?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. As I say, we've had almost gave us a heart condition trying to reach you this morning, but still, never mind. Life gets sorted through. That's the important thing. So share with us this particular story. I mean, it is good news, but obviously we can still do more.
I think we can always do more, but 53 million. And we have to be absolutely delighted with that. And that is, you know, we couldn't do that without the help of the general public, the local community. That's made up of, you know, income that's actually raised from people buying goods in the shops, but also from the items that they actually donate to us. So, you know, the British public are just very, very generous. We are delighted.
As we said, some of those figures are last year in 2014, over £53 million actually raised, which obviously helps fund life-saving research and all sorts of things as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, I think Lincolnshire was £1.29 million, so obviously, your local community has been doing their bit as well, which is fantastic.
Which is wonderful. Now, I'll just quickly introduce Christy Bond, the legendary Christy Bond, of course, a recent graduate with top-class honours.
Well done. From
the University of Lincoln, heading off to do postgraduate work. Christy, just share with us your little tale, because the British Heart Foundation saved your life as a child.
Well, they contributed to helping save my life, because I was one of the first five people in this country to ever be diagnosed with a disease called Kawasaki's disease, which is where your immune system essentially goes a bit haywire and attacks your heart muscle. And the British Heart Foundation helped my family, well, my mum and dad in particular, to be able to stay with me while I was in hospital, because I was in hospital for a really long time. And I don't think I would have recovered quite as well as I did if they hadn't have been there. So it's amazing.
What an inspirational story, I have to say. I'm so glad that you're here and telling that story.
Thank you.
And it made me very proud, you know, and there are lots of people just like yourself. So well done for what you've achieved, and I'm really glad that we have helped.
Thank you.
And it is that sort of narrative that as you say, is shared by the whole thing, that most folk have an encounter with folk who might have had challenges from that perspective. And it's a way of actually ensuring that, you know, we can look at the total health treatment. Of course, yes, there are things like lifestyle, there are other issues that come together to the fore with respect to this. But fundamentally, it's through the work of the British Heart Foundation that the funding is actually there to continue to develop.
Yeah, I don't think the general public actually realise that 440 people every day lose their lives to heart disease.
I somehow thought that the mobile phone would actually go off in a few seconds' time. So at least the challenge was with your end this time round. It's all good. It's like pass the parcel, honestly. Never mind.
Exactly. It's good job it's not live, isn't it? Do you want me to start that bit again?
It's okay. Carry on. We'll run it as live.
I don't think the public realise sometimes 440 people every day lose their lives to heart disease, and 12 babies every day are born with a heart defect, and we have got 7 million people living in the UK who are fighting against heart disease. So it's certainly, you know, 73,000 people every year sadly lose their lives. So it is something worth fighting for, and it's a real sort of tonic to hear, you know, somebody who's a success story as well.
In fact, in many ways, Christy could be a poster girl for the British Heart Foundation. It's a different line entirely. Top midweek drivette and poster girl, and indeed soon to be published author, because she's putting a book out. Go on, share the book. We might as well do a bit of cross promotion, Christy. It is.
You can find it at the Tidal Kiss Trilogy on Facebook, and it will be coming out later this year, which I'm very excited about.
It all works through that. With a dedication for the British Heart Foundation. And then maybe, because this brings us neatly round, it could become one of the quirky items that are actually donated to stores which have raised funds and capital, including Michelle Keegan's sofa, which apparently sold for £299.
Yes, it was a beautiful purple velour sofa, and we sold it on our eBay site. And I think a lot of people just went on to look to see what kind of furniture she had in her flat. So really, really welcome donation there. And
I mean, also a Doctor Who annual from 1970, which sold for £112.
Yes, Doctor Who is alive and well, and yes, selling for eBay on £112.
And of course, he's got two hearts, as we know, being a Time Lord. He's got dual circulation, so ideal from that point of view. The Ghostbusters Proton Pack toy, the all male Ghostbusters, obviously at this stage, the all female group haven't come out. That was £133.
Which yes. You work through.
And of course, a pair of green witch boots from the stage show Wicked, £620 for those.
Yes, I have to say, I smile when I think of that one because I just wonder what they're doing now. Whether that person's having wear out of them or whether they're in some cabinet somewhere, well, sort of being showed off. But £620, what fantastic.
And these days, of course, CDs being so 20th century in this world of clouds and various other bits and pieces, an original CD of Now, That's What I Call Music 4, that actually sold for £330. Yeah.
Apparently it's a collector's item, so I think we'll all be scrubbing around in our attics tonight when we hear that, just to see whether we've got that one. It's, again, fantastic money and all going to a great cause.
Absolutely. So from this particular sort of package, I mean, we looked at the figures, we looked at the good news from that point of view, how can people continue to assist with respect to the British Heart Foundation? Caroline?
Well, there's lots of ways. We have 20,000 volunteers currently, but we could always do with more help. So if anybody has some time on their hands or wants to learn, you know, get some work experience, then please get in touch with our stores or log on to our website, bhf.org.uk. Equally, keep donating all your fantastic unwanted items, whether it be a sofa, a fridge freezer, a dress, a pair of shoes or a handbag, you know, we want them. We do have free collection service, so if you want to give us a call on 0800 915 3000, we can book you in for a free collection or go on the website. And keep shopping with us, because again, you know, not everybody has things they would like to donate, but everyone needs clothes, so, and then furniture, so please, you know, give us a try, come into our stores and shop with us.
Exactly.
And that all helps.
We don't want too many nudists going into the British Heart Foundation's. So the quote of the day, actually, that for me, Caroline, everyone needs clothes. Exactly. Yeah. Particularly in a cold climate. Well, yeah, work on that basis.
And females need handbags and shoes as well, don't you know?
Essentially. And obviously, yeah. We're not gender biased as well. The man bag is there too. Caroline, been fantastic just touching base with a good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us finally today?
Thank you very much for your time.
Excellent. I take it we can look forward to...
And I hope you can make something out of it.
I think we have, and it's sorted. And we're going to keep in the mobile phone going off because it just adds to the quality of the whole thing. Can we look forward to connecting with you
I'll
again?
I'll get the sack if that's from my friend.
Not at all. Caroline, you should have a raise. That's important. That's our official
Thank
line.
Thank you.
So I take it you will return.
Yes, I will.
Caroline
Thank
Usher,
you.
Regional Manager of British Heart Foundation Furniture and Electrical Stores in the South. We salute you. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye.
Some days you just begin to think, what's happening? Caroline Usher, of course, in full force there. A wee while ago, of course, 48 hours. In fact, actually, 72 hours when I felt it was only right when we're doing this Facebook thingy. Well done, you know, our own social network. In fact, happy trails to Jeff Thompson, who I think has been tweeting about us this morning. I haven't accessed it myself because we're on Facebook. It's very difficult. Anyway, all sorts of social media across it all, shall we say, Siren FM. But anyway, we felt that as we had a royal visitation at the Great Yorkshire Show, it was only right, given of course that Sue Royce was indeed spoken to by Prince Charles and comments were made about her hat and all sorts of other bits and pieces, that we tagged in our ace royal correspondent. So in case he was wondering why he'd suddenly been tagged into a photograph that we'd actually produced of Prince Charles at the Great Yorkshire Show, that's the reason, Richard. We felt, you know, even though you weren't necessarily physically there, we felt you were there in spirit.
And the Duchess of Cornwall,
yes. Of course, yes. Exactly. So you see, you know, it's always like to be as we head up to another location report with your good self, hopefully at the National Portrait Gallery in London tomorrow, we thought, well, we can have a little bit of virtual Richard Fitzwilliams in the heart of Yorkshire.
Ah, right. No, well, thank you for the thought. And I mean, this is the week where Prince William has admitted to first day nerves as he joins the East Anglia ambulance team. That is quite a challenge for him because, I mean, as we know, he's a pretty dedicated pilot, and he was very experienced when based in Wales with the RAF search and rescue.
He'll do splendidly well. Now, when it comes to cinematic royalty, you were fortunate enough last year to meet somebody who sadly passed into that great, wonderful Hollywood aspect of the next dimension, Omar Sharif, of course.
Yes, Ivan, I think Omar Sharif, there's no question, one of the most stunning appearances ever as a debut in a widescreen. He'd been well known in Egyptian films, in Lawrence of Arabia. I mean, as Lawrence in the desert at a well sees a horseman approach in a mirage, I mean, that was a breathtaking way to make a debut for Western audiences. And I thought Sherif Ali was had depth and nobility. I thought a brilliant role, really extraordinary. And as Dr. Zhivago, no question, Lean used the fact that he's extremely expressive. Remember that scene where Zhivago, as the young doctor, looks down and sees a massacre.
Richard, you mentioned Dr. Zhivago. The official line that I'd sort of researched suggested that the only reason Omar Sharif actually got the role of Dr. Zhivago was, quite frankly, because David Lean had enough of Peter O'Toole and said that's it. He was originally considering Peter O'Toole for the role. Peter blotted his copybook, as he occasionally was wont to do, and so he offered it to Omar Sharif.
Well, I'm afraid that when it came to actual contact with and dealings with actors, very definite problems, little doubt. I mean, Lean, you had a genius, but you didn't have an easy genius. I saw a clip of Sharif's views of David Lean. They were not flattering, but there it was.
And they worked together. I mean, you know, and obviously you say he got the role, whereas, it could have been Dr. Zhivago played by Peter O'Toole. Which...
it could have been, but the fact of the matter are that once Lean had ceased directing him, and we're talking about one of the great Casanovas of, certainly of the last few decades. I mean, you think that Omar Sharif squared with Barbara Streisand, very controversial at a time of tension between Israel and Egypt, and Catherine Deneuve. I mean, he was undoubtedly irresistible. He had a certain magnetism, and that's no question at all. He was one of the world's top bridge players, but things very frequently went wrong, just as obviously he made a lot of money, so he lost vast sums. And his career, I think that much of that was extremely sad. I mean, he had been a top romantic lead in Egypt in the 50s. He'd married Faten Hamama, his first wife and only love, who, alas, they subsequently divorced. Sharif's career was quite extraordinary. It never realized his potential. He frittered it away with choices of movies he had to make money, because he did lose large sums. But no doubt he leaves us. There was a magnetism, you know, just to meet him briefly meant something, because he was legendary and for a reason.
Now, when it comes to good taste, finding a clip from TED 2 is virtually impossible to actually use in any way, shape or form. But that's okay, because clearly, from the point of view of having had the guilty pleasure of watching the first in the TED series, and I must admit, you know, I was thinking, I bet it's not lest our mascot Spike actually get hold of this one and go crazy. I find it mildly amusing. You want to actually move from Omar Sharif, missing out Paris, we will return to Paris, and move straight into TED 2. Yes.
Well, you decided that TED 2, not Love and Mercy, was the one to move straight into because of the contrast. I mean, of all the incongruities, I agree. The creation by Seth MacFarlane, who directs and
co-wrote. Ted's getting married. You know, we see that in the whole thing. Ted is actually getting married. Sorry, watching the trailer. That's very exciting.
Tammy Lynn, yes, he does decide to get married, but there are problems. Even in a more liberal society such as the United States, well, I mean, to preserve their relationship, he marries, but on the other hand, there is a problem, firstly, with reproduction.
Fertility is obviously there, important.
Which is most certainly important, but also there's his relationship with John Bennett. After all, Bennett being addicted to internet porn, Ted is trying to be helpful. Also, there's the idea of a sperm donor, and also there is John's life. John played, has to be said, by Mark Wahlberg, and the fact that Ted becomes property. That's that great tragedy in Ted's life. His marriage is annulled as he has the status of property. So his case is assigned to the delicious Amanda Seyfried. Samantha Jackson is the character she plays. And there are walk-on parts, Morgan Freeman, a rather good cameo. When has he... I don't think Freeman has ever put in a bad performance. And Jessica Barth, she does her stuff as Tammy Lynn. You wouldn't get Liam Neeson in the supermarket. I mean, good gracious me. The point being, of course, I have to admit, being fond of teddy bears and not particularly liking the concept of one as foul-mouthed as this, and you can't get a bear that, or indeed any creature, no Paddington.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to take him home to meet your mum, would you, let's face
it? No, you most certainly wouldn't. But let's face it, I mean, the fans, it's a strictly produced movie, this, and well enough scripted. Heaven knows it's not subtle, it's not intended to be, and you know what you're going to see. So if you want to see Ted and you find it funny, you find the whole idea of a bear who mouths obscenities all through the movie, and it's a send-up of the politically correct era. After all, I mean, if you have gay marriage, according to Ted, you can have marriage with one of his property.
Interspecies relationships.
Well, he can be reclassified, you see. So there are court cases which are amusing, and there's much of this movie that, given it is what it is, it would, I'd have thought, please the fans. I didn't see, as I said, didn't see the first one, which got critical acclaim. This one hasn't been such a hit, and I think it's a sort of joke that can wear pretty thin, but it produces at a certain level. And if you like the idea, or you find it funny, and I have to say the audience, when I saw it, which wasn't at a preview because I was in Paris at the time, certainly was screaming with laughter. Well, I mean, it will please some people. And
it could have been pain, of course. You know, it might have been laughter, could have been pain. They might have been having sort of all sorts of things, you know, that were happening there. But from your own point of view, Eva, have you seen Ted the first one, or would you be looking to see Ted 2?
I've never seen
emotion.
Yeah, I've never seen them. Ted before, so
I'd
have to watch the first one.
Being a well brought up, well mannered young lady with the best, you might find it just a little bit raunchy.
Putting
in a verbal way.
Maybe.
So we put that
a warning.
Yeah, little bit of a warning there from that point of view. And equally, if we have any parents who might be sort of considering, it's a movie about a talking teddy bear. I'll buy that for little Johnny. Don't, okay? Just don't go there. Just do not. It'd be very embarrassing. And if you screened it for your, sainted aunt, she'd be shocked. And the family repercussions would go on for years. So we're just putting that warning out there. You know?
On the other hand, I mean, a movie that's politically incorrect whenever possible, there's no question at all that, it is an extended joke, but it's of its type. I did find there was quite a lot to enjoy with it once you, I have to say, did sink to its level, which after all you did by walking into the cinema to see it.
Or wait for the DVD.
Yes.
Have we got any love or mercy whatsoever then for Ted, or do we just move on to love and mercy?
We look at Ted with a certain amount of amusement, because some of the lines were very, very funny. Some of them, not all of them. We moved to Love and Mercy, directed by Bill Poland, and based on the songwriter and singer Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, and one of the great musical geniuses. And this is a film that is very cleverly structured, because it covers the 1960s. It's intercut between the 60s and the 1980s, where Paul Dano plays Wilson when a member of the band, and also when he's starting to experience some awful mental decline whilst being supremely creative. And in the 1980s, he's older, obviously, and also under the control of a monstrous therapist, most memorably played by Paul Giamatti, and Wilson is played then by John Cusack. So the structure of the film, the way it's cut, it works very well, because you're really looking at a musical genius here, and Paul Dano's performance is absolutely excellent. He's there's the creative side, there's the fact that he is so extraordinarily talented, and also the fact he's suffering from panic attacks and voices in the head. So it is a very unusual movie, and Dano performs exceptionally well. There are scenes, I mean, to have Paul Giamatti as Dr. Paul Landy, a therapist who has total control over him, but he does attempt to build a relationship with Ken black saleswoman, Melinda Ledbetter, played by Elizabeth Banks, who's absolutely determined to save him from this manipulative character.
Richard, hold it there. We'll be back with a consideration of Love and Mercy and indeed a little snippet, a smidgen of Paris after this.
I love the colourful clothes she wears and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. Softly smile, I know she must be kind. In her eyes, she goes with me to a blossom room.
I don't know, Richard. Why do you think we might have played that little piece of music then?
I have no idea.
No, Eva, any thoughts as to why we cut across to that?
No. You'd probably have to tell me.
Well, should we insult the listener's intelligence, Richard, by saying it was indeed Les Garçons de la Plage? French Beach Boys, of course. And Good Vibrations. Sorry, I just used a little bit of French there to move over to Paris. Pierre Bonnard, the Musée d'Orsay, the Jean-Paul Gaultier Grand Palais, and, of course, Paris Fashion Week and all sorts of things, which we'll be teasing ahead to, because we'll share a few moments of this, because we might be meeting up with you tomorrow, hopefully, at the National Portrait Gallery, which I think...
Indeed, we will. Yeah. I guess it's absolutely fascinating, because Paris has for long been identified, still is, I think, with fashion at its finest. And I have to say, it was going to the Palais Galleria, and I do have to say, this was in a heat wave, and their air conditioning needs a lot to be desired. Mm-hmm. Even so, Jean Lambert, who born 1867 and died just after the war, this honors the oldest fashion house in existence, and it was absolutely extraordinary to see the classical French clothes.
Of course, you talk fashion. Great Yorkshire show yesterday, Eva and myself.
That's true.
Prime seats, thanks to the wonderful, fantastic work of Bernadette Gladhill. We were sitting right next to Lady Ingleby. And we have to say, hats off once again to the fashion designers who actually worked at the Great Yorkshire Show. We're putting several photographs up on Facebook. Do you see yourself there? Yeah, exactly.
You do skip around. I have to say, you bring that big up. Jean-Paul Gaultier, was he there? I mean, did anyone wear...
Well, tragically, no. But the thing was, the beauty of the fashion show is a lot of the fashions you can actually see people wearing, you know, as opposed to some of the material which... let's be honest, Richard, I know you have an outrageous style at times, but it's unlikely, even when J.P. Dickey gets to work on your new refashioned, revamped website, that you're going to be sort of parading around in conical bras and very... Although, who knows? I mean, stranger things have happened, I suppose, but I would doubt it.
It can certainly have happened, but when it comes to... strange and outrageous things. One of the things I do think is exceptionally interesting is the fact that in London we've got Savage Beauty, the Alexander McQueen show, which we reviewed some time ago, which is now so popular that they're opening all night, and the Victoria and Albert Museum have really triumphed with that show, and he was obviously... tragic suicide, of course, but the bad boy of British fashion and also one of its most creative geniuses. And you've got Jean-Paul Gaultier, who was the equivalent when it came to outrageous designs and tremendous amount of talent in France. I mean, Paris-born, this is a huge exhibition at the Grand Palais, and I was riveted, I have to say, because I had not previously seen, with the obviously the clothes on dummies, and these are dummies with computer-generated eyes and mouths.
Showroom dummies.
I hadn't seen this before in a show, and it's certainly...
It's the next stage forward. Listen to the Stone Tapes this evening at 7 p.m. with Sam Stone and, indeed, David J. Howe, and, indeed, a special appearance by Christy Bond, and another a local ace author and horror writer, Simon Clarke. And, indeed, the theme...
I was trying to get something in about his trademark stripes.
The theme is artificial intelligence. You can, I'm looking at a poster just outside the window here, which actually says you can meet Mark the robot at Lincoln and interact from a human point of view there. So it's only a matter of time before I personally will be replaced by a robot. Many people have said that happened many years ago, actually.
Oh, my goodness me. I mean, of course, I'm glad that you can laugh at yourself. What is it that Dame Edna Everidge famously said to Lord Archer? If you can't laugh at yourself, you'll be missing the joke of the century.
Precisely. There we are. Or both centuries in my case, being a 20th century boy. You know.
Jean-Paul Gaultier, but one of the aspects of the show that is terrific. I mean, for example, the corset. I mean, he was criticised by feminists because a certain amount of...
It's an aspect of male bondage for the female form.
Yes, a lot of that. There is, of course, his point that he was post-feminist. Whether or not you buy that... Well, no question.
Eva, have you ever worn a corset?
No, I think they would be quite painful.
Well, particularly if the straps and the things are sort of wrapped in...
Yes, particularly
course,
that.
A century or so ago, you would have inevitably been wearing a corset.
That's true, yes.
Yes, you would indeed, but of course that would be then an inner garment, whereas some of his corsets are outer garments.
Indeed Madonna has demonstrated on many a time.
But it has to be said that when you have an exhibition that's so beautifully laid out, I mean, displays. One of the rooms, huge room, you've got a catwalk moving with the dummies, as I say, with these computer-generated faces in some cases, and the catwalk is moving. There's his can-can dress of various ethnic influences, a room devoted to that. There's also a room devoted to the inspiration of Paris on his work and so forth. What they do, and it's absolutely charming, is recreate a front row, so... A dummy, but I mean meant to be Susie Menkes or meant to be Anna Wintour, and also lastly, like Amy Winehouse there, the front row, all wearing Gaultier. And the other side, you've got a huge number of his punk outfits. I mean, these are ones that...
I can see that it has captured your imagination, Richard.
Well, it has, because it's the background you've got graffiti, so...
And to shift...
A room in a show that's spectacular. It's got videos of a lot of his work, and it really does show also the way the City of Light influenced him. I was fascinated by it. I really thought, this is...
He's on the phone now. And to shift from Ted 2 right the way through to the perspectives of Jean-Paul Gaultier is something which really only the Midweek Drive Morning Edition would even dare.
I don't think that you intended that I should go on to
As we come to the sort of wrap of this particular package, fashion wrap there, Eva, would you be tempted to see Love and Mercy?
I think so, yes.
It's an exceptionally... sensitive with film. It's a very moving study of a fight against mental illness, with Paul Dana being particularly good. John Cusack, who plays Wilson when he's broken and controlled, has less of a challenging role. If you want to see Paul Giamatti as a monstrous therapist...
Then clearly this is the movie for you, which is
worthwhile. It's well shot, too.
So... As we've just had a text from Katie Grimerson, who would like a shout-out on the show in her own way. Actually, Katie had sent a text to me saying she'd gone off Facebook. I know she's still liking things on Facebook. So I'm going to say she was only a temporary step away from there. Maybe she was frustrated at the time. I don't know if that was to do with working in the jewellery quarter of Birmingham. Well, the oldest part of Birmingham, it would seem. But anyway, good morning, Katie, and we'll hopefully mention you once again to William Sitwell later. Finally, at this particular stage, Richard, it may well be that as well as Ed Wellman, Eva MacDonald might join us tomorrow as well for a location report in London at the National Portrait Gallery. We're assuming, of course, Neil Evans, who I CC'd you into an email I sent off to Neil this morning. Yeah, exactly. We'll say all's well with that. What should Eva expect if all's well and we can rendezvous with your good self at the National Portrait Gallery in about 27 hours from now?
Well, what you should expect is to have a tour of part of a huge gallery. I mean, up to 1969, it only included above our royalty the portraits of living persons. Subsequent to that, you see the way it's popularized, and indeed, you go to the BP Portrait Award, 300,000 people visited it.
300,000? That's twice as many as go to the Great Yorkshire Show!
You have a habit, I think, of bringing the Great Yorkshire Show into congruous.
It is the country's largest agricultural show, and in fact was offered the chance of actually becoming the Royal Yorkshire Show, but then they would have had to have lost the Great. They couldn't have the Great Royal Yorkshire Show. It had to be one or the other, so they went for the Great Yorkshire Show. And Prince Charles is the patron. That's
the Royal as a sub-bouquet. I mean, you have it as part of a name. The Royal National Theatre, never for some reason.
Not the Great National Theatre.
Well, I don't think that would work either.
Are you saying they don't have great stuff there? Richard, please, this could set us up into all sorts of things here.
That's a different topic, I have to say. The National Theatre is one of London's jewels. No one would dispute that. And one of the things I'm very grateful for is that the really big hits, not all of them, but most of them, make it to the West End afterwards. So,
there we have it. Anyway, so fingers crossed, you'll be able to meet both Eva MacDonald and myself, and hopefully Ed Wellman, and maybe even Emma Thompson might be joining us. Emma Tinson, I should say.
Oh, I was wondering. Would indeed.
It would be almost like a sort of a paragon of joys in all sorts of ways. Anyway, we'll sure be on the case. Meanwhile, Eva, would you like to put those last two questions to Richard? Go.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, we've covered everything. Prince William, Omar Sharif, Love and Mercy, Ted 2.
Always download the podcast if you miss any of that. It'll be available shortly.
We certainly have.
And
will you be joining us again soon?
Well, tomorrow, yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Pointy bras at the ready. Jean-Paul Gaultier, this is for you.
What are you looking at?